today with Luke Choro. Mm. Where are we, Luke? We're in Westmoreland Street, isn't it?
Yeah, mostly Bewley's.
Bewley's, yeah. Brand old spot as well when the evenings are getting bright. Now, the history of Pan-Africanism, it's quite old, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's Pan-Africanism is as old as the struggle of Africans. It's as old as the struggle of Africans from slave trade to the new world as we know it now, the Europe and what the so-called industrialized world and developing world.
So in 1900,
that was the first Pan-Africanism, mm-hmm. Pan-Africanist Congress, which was held in London.
Yeah.
But for the record, there are about 7 Pan-Africanist Congress which have been held ever since. Mm-hmm. The last one was held in 1993-94 in Kampala, Uganda.
Oh, right. But originally it was a diaspora of Africans, Caribbeans, Americans maybe.
Most of the Pan-African was formed by Africans in diaspora, especially in Caribbean and America. Mm. The reason is, in spite of all what they were doing, they were not recognized. So there was a need of something that they can say, this is ours.
Yeah.
In that way, we saw that most of the founders of Pan-Africanism, they have to make sure that they go into the background to find out the culture, the history of Africa. And was at that time, the only history and culture which was recognized was the European history, was the history and culture of the explorers, the slave master.
It's just an ordinary response to a repression, maybe.
Yeah, it was a response, but it also contributed so much to the development of African culture, especially like the works that Padmore and others did. It really contributed to what we've got now.
His name?
Padmore.
Is he the most predominant of Pan-African?
Yeah, he is one of the predominant, including people like Marcus Garvey. I think he's well known because of the movement he formed. Yeah.
Padmore is P-A-D-M-O, is it?
Yeah. Lord Padmore, yeah. There was also William and others.
Yeah. You got interested in socialism when you were in Zimbabwe.
Yeah. At first, we were, more Pan-Africanist. This is not by accident. It is because of the way we were brought up during the colonial era in Zimbabwe and the liberation struggle which was led by the ZANLA and ZIPRA forces. I mean, the ZANLA, which were the one for Mugabe and the other for Joshua Nkomo.
Yeah.
So they brought a brand of Pan-Africanism and scientific socialism. Mm. As Zimbabwe was mainly sponsored, we can say. I mean, ZANLA forces was mainly for China oriented, and ZIPRA were more from Russia. So they bring that brand of socialism. Mugabe was pro China, and Nkomo was pro Moscow.
And what was Mugabe sincere in the beginning?
I would say that he did so much for the development of the country, especially infrastructure, education and health. There were more schools and hospitals which were built in the early 80s. So it was a success story for Africa.
And land, he redistributed land?
Not really, no. But there was some amendments in 1990. Land Acquisition Act was there in 1990.
Oh, right.
And on the land issue, it's just one of the one of the issue which has been misconceived by most of European states, because I don't think anyone who really know the history of Africa and Southern Africa in particular would deny the struggle of land in Africa.
Even the Irish people should know that with the Land League and trying to reclaim land back.
Because land was taken. I think the only difference between what Mugabe is doing and what was done is only that he's doing it now when everyone observes human rights. But the way he's doing it is the same the way primitive accumulation, which the colonialists did.
And there's probably another aspect too, because things only started getting bad for Mugabe when, first of all, because the IMF put pressure on him, he had to lay off 60,000 civil service jobs in 1993. And the World Bank started to put pressure on him because he began to respond to the rioters, to students and demonstrators. The World Bank began to back
the opposition.
MDC then, at that stage.
Yeah. But MDC is a product of Mugabe's policies. Mm. It's not the product of IMF and World Bank. It's a product of Mugabe's policies. Because yes. Changira and others who were the trade unionists, mm-hmm. I still remember us as activists calling them to form Workers' Party, and they refused and said that, no, mm-hmm. our role is to campaign for workers' rights, not politics. Those want politics, they should form their own party.
Yeah.
But as ESAP, Economic Structure Adjustment Program, was pressing on workers with mass closing down of factories, mm. Living standards going down, and poverty and HIV AIDS and
Mugabe
all that.
Mugabe was blamed for that, even though it was he was only instituting World Bank policy.
Oh yeah. I mean, Mugabe is one to blame because he was the supervisor of it, He was telling people you have to tighten up your belts.
He was representative of the IMF.
He was the face and representative of IMF.
Yeah.
We now know about IMF because of now of the crisis, but by that time, he was saying that they are doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Was the later call it Zimprest.
Yeah.
I mean, they give it another name, So they were not clear to the people. And if they've stand their ground, because we know that ESAP failed in Latin America, failed in most of African countries.
Yeah.
And they keep on going on and taking it on. So we can't say that he didn't know what was happening. But
originally, he had good intentions because he did so well for literacy and for health in Zimbabwe, for instance, in the 1980s.
Yes.
Well, something happened to him in the 1990s that the World Bank got to him.
No.
And people reacted to that.
No. We can't take away that he is a hero of Zimbabwe. No one can take that for him, that he fought against colonialism.
Yeah.
But he also has to accept that he destroyed the workers and people of Zimbabwe's aspirations.
And he's doing particularly terrible things right now, isn't he?
Yeah, he has become more reactionary. Mm. He's no longer a revolutionary. He has become more reactionary.
Mm.
Not only attacking commercial farmers, but he's also attacking workers from foreign origin, like Malawians, Zimbabweans, who might be second generation or third generation in the country.
And isn't that strange? Because you were saying earlier on that Mugabe claims to be a Pan-Africanist. Like Gaddafi or like Thabo Mbeki, and it's very odd that he should be expelling fellow Africans from his country because they're Malawis.
Yeah, that's the major challenge we're facing most of the Pan-Africanists at the moment, is to reclaim Pan-Africanism from all these people who are trying to privatize it, like Kenneth Kaunda and others who always want to portray themselves as Pan-Africanists when the chips are down.
Yeah.
But when they were holding the positions, they were also working as agents of IMF and World Bank. For us to understand this, you can even see people like Kamuzu Banda of Malawi, Jomo Kenyatta, were even members of Pan-African movement. They even attended Congress in London.
Mm-hmm.
But these people, when they got power in their respective country, Malawi and Kenya, they become as bad as those colonialists again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so for us to go back to where Frantz Fanon, Kwame Nkrumah and others were pushing, we have to understand that Africa just as good as in other continents in the world, there's class division. There are those who have and those who doesn't have. And this, to understand this, you can even understand from the point of the peasants in Uganda from the Kimaji region when they are fighting against colonialism. They call Nyabingi, which means death to black and white oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
So they really understood that there was a class issue among that.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, you can say just talk about color of a skin, ignoring the interest one represents. You can see many people died in South Africa from the Zulu movement, Inkatha Freedom Party, attacked those who were not Zulus, saying that they shouldn't belong there. And being sponsored by the apartheid regime, Same applies to Donald Savimbi in Angola, who was sponsored by America and the apartheid regime from South Africa. So, one, you can say he's a brother. You have to check what interest he's pushing.
But it was like a Cold War. I mean, for instance, nationalism is also used, or for instance, in the north of Ireland, we have Protestant working classes are stirred up to see Catholics as the enemy, where in fact they're probably the people who own the shipyards, the people who exploit them on the property.
Oh, yeah, I think that's why we were talking about, I mean, that's why we had a meeting on Sunday to talk about Pan-Africanism and globalization. Just as what happened during the period of slavery, there were slave drivers and the house slave. They thought they were better than those who work in the field. Yeah. Same applies to the ruling class in Africa, the current black bourgeois. They are just as bad as the white colonialists or white imperialists who are in Africa, because they are all driven by the same thing, to maximize their profits and make money as much as they can, irrespective of the consequences.
For instance, you were mentioning Jonas Savimbi. Eduardo dos Santos is now MPLA. He's been president since 1976 in that civil war, originally sponsored by Cuba. And now he seems to be sponsored by USA now. You know, USA just switched sides from Savimbi because he lost, because he died.
Oh,
and now they're sponsoring
That's a very interesting point. It really shows that imperialism has no permanent allies. It's got a permanent interest. As long as you push their interest, you are their friend. They put a blind eye to what you are doing.
Yes.
We have seen that in Haiti at the moment, what is happening in Haiti. Instead, they put him in, now they're also pushing him off.
And
also to Mugabe. Mugabe was their darling. I remember, I think it was in the 80s or 90s when the conservative government of Margaret Thatcher gave him a medal. Yeah. What they say, he's a good leader. Now, because Mugabe no longer represents their interests, now he's enemy number one. But I'm not saying that he is good, but I'm saying that as long as you represent the interests of the imperialists, they will try to keep you.
See, we can imagine, though, if Nelson Mandela lived in Britain, he'd be in jail. Because that's what Margaret Thatcher said, a terrorist is a terrorist is a terrorist.
Oh.
And even if he got elected to the House of Commons, he would have still remained in jail.
Oh, yeah.
That's how she treated. And that's what we know, perhaps. There is another question I wanted to ask you about globalization. And you remember, you were telling me about Seattle, 97.
Oh, yes, I was saying that you asked me why I became a socialist and why I'm not like other Pan-Africanists who say Africa for Africans, because the world we are living now is really changed. The global economy is no longer based in one country, but you have to understand that most of what happens in our country is interlinked. It's interlinked.
And it's a global struggle.
Global struggle. And for us as Africans, for us to have a successful struggle and to win the battle, we need solidarity from other people suffering as we are doing in Latin America, even here in Europe. So in that way, we need something which is as big as imperialism to counter imperialism and exploitation of global corporate businesses. So we need workers here in Europe, workers in America, Latin America, Africa, stand together as they do in Davos, as they did in Prague, in Genoa.
Yeah.
I think that has shown something. I think at first you can even see that mainstream media, they tried to ignore that.
That's right.
As if they're only lunatic students, overzealous students.
Mm-hmm.
But now they keep a real serious thing. They know that it's no longer a small thing, but it's a real issue.
Yes.
Because you see now, even in South Africa, people have formed anti-privatization forums in Zimbabwe, in Zambia.
Yes.
So it shows that what has happened here can also inspire people.
You're saying it's no longer greed. Because when you first seen that, you said, were they looking for more money? Are they looking for... But you said it's completely opposite of that.
It's the opposite
of greed. It's the opposite of... It's looking for diversity. It's looking for respect for all humans and for all ways of life.
Oh, yeah. You know, what happened in Seattle... We saw it in television, so in the newspapers. But for us, the impression of America we have got is the one we saw at MTV, where black musicians and football players. Yeah. They've got big money, big cars, and that. And we know about Melrose Place, you know, those shops. There's no proof of it. But when we saw those people in the streets, ask them, why are they in the streets?
Yeah.
What are they fighting for more money? Are they? Yeah. What do they want?
And they didn't see that in a soap opera.
But later on, we saw no, they were there for us. They were fighting for us. They want a better world.
Yeah.
I mean, they want WTO, World Trade Organization, to be fair, mm-hmm. to also consider, to also look the issue of subsidizing. What happened in America, where the farmers are being subsidized, where those in Africa they have to, but where they all compete at the same market,
it's
equal footing.
So Irish taxpayer pays the Irish farmer billions every year, so that the Ethiopian person who needs probably the food probably a bit more because of the way distribution works throughout the world globally, and they cannot compete with that market because our taxpayers are paying for our own farmers' richness and also paying for things like charities.
So when we saw that Seattle uprising, it was very inspiring. Yeah. It make even more of us, though we were minority, that to feel that no, we are not alone.
Yeah.
And I think it also give a good picture for those in Europe to know that people in Africa were not only crying and suffering, but they are also organizing and resisting.
But people in Europe only knew what was being done to Africa and about, for instance, most of the money that goes from Africa goes in debt. Most of the money that's made in Africa goes in debt back to the developed world. And the debt was only Africa is very rich in resources. I mean, non-renewable resources, and perhaps that's another question. But and maybe the old models shouldn't be followed. But there's no way that people should be exploited in permanent slavery like this. You'd agree with me on that?
I do agree that the struggle of Europeans cannot only be won by Europeans, but it will be won by all people who are suffering the same struggle across the globe, Latin America and Africa.
Yeah.
Same applies with the struggle of Africans. At the moment, Thabo Mbeki of South Africa, together with the Obasanjo Nigeria and other leaders, they are pushing NEPAD, New Economic Program for Africa Development. That program is just another economic structure adjustment program. It is going to have so much impact on the lives of ordinary Africans.
Privatization of health and education, of water, is
just a neoliberal policy.
In Mali, in the desert.
Yeah.
Privatization of water is a joke.
Yeah. Even in Ghana. But the good news is that working people in the urban poor, they also counter that by forming those organizations and privatization. They also learned from the struggles they have seen in Genoa, in Seattle. As I said, they've re-inspired them that if they are organized, they've got solidarity from international community.
So if they can stop thinking just for the moment, and think about just everybody, think for themselves, but I don't know, you could probably say it far better than I can.
It's just as good as what was happening in Zimbabwe, when a commercial farm workers were being beaten and killed. No one paid attention there. But when a commercial farmer was killed, a white commercial farmer was killed, it was in the media, NBS, you know, and all those main media. So it made people in Zimbabwe to form those organizations and the movement. Was right now in Zimbabwe, they've got a social forum, the one just like those who were in Mumbai in India. There were also some Zimbabweans who went there as delegates. So it can just show you how people have just come to understand that you only to be black is not to mean that you've got same interest. But those people who feel the way you feel are your best friends and your best colleagues and comrades in arms.
We want our humanity back.
Humanity back, yeah. A better world.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Luke Choro.
Thanks very much. On the meeting on Sunday, we agreed that we should have our monthly or bi-monthly journal. to tackle those questions about Pan-Africanism and globalization.
When's the next one?
I think next issue will be by end of this week.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I think many people will also want to know about it. We shall have some forums around the country to go and talk about it, especially about racism, the new laws about immigration, that, because we don't think that there's any human who is illegal. I think every human has got a right to be where he is, to move just as good as Nike and Coca-Cola go in everywhere.
Sure.
I've seen that in Mogadishu in Somalia. Coca-Cola will be able to produce Coca-Cola in that country, you know. But human beings cannot be allowed to just do the same move to go where capital and products go.
So I think it's a slightly different question, because what happens is humans become workers become victims of the global labor market, which has been manipulated by capital.
Right, yeah.
So, and that means that workers from Nigeria, for instance, become victims of the same labor market, because they have to leave their homes to follow the money to go to Dublin. Just like the Dublin worker will probably perceive competition in the low-skilled tasks. And basically, again, worker has been paid against worker for exploitative reasons, because people want wages to be lowered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but that is true. But I don't think it will be fair for a government to say that we don't want immigrants in this country.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's why we say that I think us as immigrants, we've got the rights to be here. And it shouldn't be something that we should beg, but it's something that should be known that it's a right for everyone to be here, just as good as those others who are in different worlds, I mean, in countries.
That's,
I think,
right.
They've got right to be there.
Absolutely.
No wonder why I was attacking Mugabe and Thabo Mbeki, that deporting people from respective countries.
And let's make it clear, it would be quite unsafe to say what you're saying in Zimbabwe, and it certainly wouldn't go out on radio.
Oh, that's true. But, that being said, struggle will continue unabated.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Well, again, Luke Choro, thank you very much for speaking
to us. No, thank you very much.
Let's hope we speak again soon.
Okay.